Today's Shem Sechta Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Beis, and we will begin on Daf Beis Hashem Yisbarach on the Mishnah at the bottom of Daf Yud Aleph on the Beis. Says the Mishnah, Ish Yeshba Avodah Kachavim, the city that celebrates a holiday for the Avodah Zarah, Chutzla Mutar. So if that city is celebrating, unfortunately, that holiday, outside of the city, the people outside of that city are allowed to do business. The restrictions that apply to a holiday don't apply out to the people not in the city where the holiday is being observed. And same thing, vice versa, chutzalah, laveres kachavim, if outside of the city a day is being celebrated for avodah zarah, toicha, the people who are living in the city don't have a problem. For them, they're allowed to do business on that day, that because it's not considered a holiday for those people. Continues the Mishnah. Ma leilach l'sham. The Mishnah discusses that if today is a holiday in a city, what is the halacha about somebody going to visit that city on that day? It says the Mishnah, b'zman shederach michedes lo samakam. If it's a situation that the road is only leads to that place, and there's nowhere else that this road is leading to, usur. Because people are going, even though it's certainly not the attention of that person to worship the Avodah Zarah, but since this is the way that everybody who's going is going for that purpose, so therefore it's usur, because there's going to be, people are going to accuse him that he's participating in the worshiping of Avodah Zarah. But if this is not a road that leads exclusively to that city, so people will not necessarily accuse him that he's going to that city, and therefore the halacha is that it's more to travel that road. The Yerushalmi, however, takes this halacha and limits it even more. He says, this halacha is only related to people who are traveling. However, people who live in the city are not prohibited from entering the city, because it's obvious that the people who are traveling this road are traveling on this road because this is where they live. And since they're traveling on the road where they live, nobody's going to accuse them of entering the city for the wrong reason. The Rashba takes this Yerushalmi a step further. He says, as long as there are Jews living in the city, then even a visitor is permitted to travel there, because people will assume that this person is traveling not to Chas V'Shalom worship the Avodah Zarah, but rather he's traveling because he's going to visit another Jew. However, the Yishach says it depends on the number of Jews that live in that city. He says that the Yerushalmi, which is lenient, is permitted, is talking in a case. The Yerushalmi is talking about a person who lives in that city. Says the Shach, a person who lives in that city, as the Yerushalmi indicates, is permitted to go there under all circumstances. But a person who doesn't live in the city is only allowed to travel when they're then the visitor is allowed to travel, because there the chances that he's traveling to visit a Jew is very reasonable. But if there are less than 10 Jews, then the person who lives there could go there, but a visitor would not be allowed to go there. And this question also applies to the question if somebody's allowed to go into a courtyard or a base of Avodah Zarah. The question is, if somebody's going in there not for the purpose of worship, may he go in there? Says the Rashba, that even if somebody wants to enter there to speak to the priest, for example, about a very urgent matter, nothing to do, of course, with worshiping Avodah Zarah, it's still also to enter the church because of Maris Ayin. He furthermore says that even if it's a situation of Pikuach Nefesh, one would not be allowed to enter a base of Avodah Zarah, because as we learned in Masechta Sanhedrin, Avodah Zarah is one of the three Averis of Yehareg Val Yaver, and this is included in that halacha. The Ran disagrees with Rashba, and he says that the chiyuv of Yarg Valyavar only applies to actual worship of Avodah Zarah. We're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah under any circumstances, even no matter what. But here, the issue is not an issue of actually worshiping Avodah Zarah. Here, the concern is a concern of Maris Ayin. It says, the Ran, when it's only an issue of Maris Ayin, so it's not considered the actual Avera of Avodah Zarah. And therefore, he's lenient under those circumstances. The Ran similarly says that we're going to be speaking in our shir about somebody bowing down in front of an idol to take a drink of water from a fountain. So again, the Ran says that entire Isser is only an Isser of Maris Ayin. And since it's only an Isser of Maris Ayin, if it's a situation, he says, of Bikuach Nefesh, one would be allowed to bow down in front of the idol in such a situation. When the Torah quotes this halacha, the Torah seems to contradict himself. One place he says, like the Rashba, who says that one is not allowed to enter a Beis Avodah Zarah under any circumstances, even in a situation of Bikuach Nefesh. In another place he says, that the Rosh says that one who is running away from a situation of danger, the question is he allowed to take refuge in a church? And the Rosh says that since it's a situation of Bikuach Nefesh, and he's not entering it, that place, to worship Avodah Zarah, it's mutter. So Torah seems to be following the opinion of the Ran. The Prisha, in answering the position of the Torah, says that the reason he allows somebody to seek refuge in a church is because there's no reason for suspicion in such a situation. Somebody is running after him, and he's running into the church. Everybody sees how somebody's running after him, so there's no concern with Maris Ayin. So he says that says the Prisha, the Torah does agree that Maris Ayin is considered as a real concern, even in the situation of, in the case of Avodah Zarah, that the halacha would be Yarg Valyavar. He says, but sometimes there really is no Maris Ayin. When is that? When somebody's running in, where it's obvious why he's running in. And therefore, even though we're going to be learning in our shir that Maris Ayin is usur, even bechadri chadorim, I guess what the Prisha means to say, there are different levels of Maris Ayin. And a Maris Ayin, which is not obvious that you're doing it for a permissible reason, is usur. But when it's a situation where it's obvious that it's usur, even though normally Maris Ayin is also under all circumstances, here where it's a situation of life and death, and the entire concern is only based on Maris Ayin, there's room for leniency. But one thing is quite clear, that it's certainly usur to walk into a Beis Avodah Zarah. The entire discussion that we have here is in a situation of Bikuach Nefesh. But if it's not a situation of Bikuach Nefesh, everybody would agree that one may not walk in under those circumstances to a Avodah Zarah. And of course, the Shach actually adds that not only may we not walk into Beis Avodah Zarah, we have to stay away, Dalet Amis, four Amis from Avodah Zarah. The one question that does come up, and the proof is from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is saying that we're not allowed to even walk on a road, which is presumably the road to Avodah Zarah, which people will think that you're walking to the road of Avodah Zarah. Certainly, walking into the base of Avodah Zarah is certainly usur. However, there is a question that the Poskim discuss: is the base of Avodah Zarah that there is in our world really considered a base of Avodah Zarah? Because as we know, the Nochrim, Bezman Hazeh, when they worship, is B'shituf. They believe in God, they also believe in something else. Is that considered a Avodah Zarah, particularly is in an Avodah Zarah for the Nachrim. And the Klaus Magareba in Yerideya Simon Mem, the Shas Achuvas de Reyatsiv, discusses the question about walking into a Mahatz, because he quotes the opinion of the Rambam, which we're going to be discussing later in our Masechta, where the Rambam's opinion is that the Yishmaelim, the Muslims, are not considered Avdei Avodah Zarah, because they also believe only in one God. They don't believe, obviously, in Tiras Moshe, but that's not necessary that a Nochri is obligated to enter into the base of Avodah Zarah. So the question is, maybe in a situation of danger, one would be allowed to go into Muslims, into a Muslim house of worship, into a mosque. Then the question would be a step further. If we're going to be lenient with allowing one entering into a mosque, what would be the halacha of somebody doing work at a mosque? Would that be usur? If we're saying you're allowed to enter it, does that mean you're only allowed to enter it? How far would the heter of entering a mosque go? And not only would there be a question of how far does the heter of entering a mosque go, but the question would actually go a step further. If a mosque is not considered a base of a desire at all, then maybe the halacha would be that one could even do work in a mosque for profit. Says the Gemara, the Mishnah began with halacha, that there's a difference between the city and outside the city regarding the day of the holiday. So ask the Gemara, Hechi Dami Chutzalah, what is meant by the Mishnah when it says Chutzalah, you're allowed to go? Amar Rav Shimon Malakish, Rav Shimon Rav Chanina, Kigoynat Luza. It's the place where the animal was sold in the city of Aza. That means you had the city, and there was right outside the city where there was the animal market, and they were very close. Still, it's considered two distinct areas, and what applies to one doesn't apply to the other. And as I sort of Meiri points out, that even though one is within the tchum of the other, and there isn't a wall separating, it's still permissible. However, I did see the Rishonim point out, you don't need to have a wall separating these two cities. But what you do need to have, they suggest, at the minimum, is to have something which will serve as a barrier between these two cities, a road or something. But if there's no barrier at all separating these two areas, it becomes much more of a complicated question if there's room for leniency. Ikadami, there's a different version of this Gemara. Ba'aminai Rav Shim Ben Lokesh Rav Chanina at Luzer Shel Aza Mahu. Is somebody allowed to do business in the marketplace of Aza if it's a holiday in Aza itself? And Amala and Rav Chanina responded to Rav Shlokish, Lo Yalach Tzur Miyamecha, have you not ever gone to the city of Tzur? V'risi Yisrael V'ayvik Chavim, Sheshav Sheshtei Kederes L'gavik Ira Achas, and you've seen Nachri and Yisrael put two pots, and the Gemara will explain this elaborately, on one fire, V'lo Hashalach Chamim, and Chazal did not say that just because the two pots are near each other, we have an issue. Here too, even though these two locations are so close to each other, if one is it's a holiday and one it's not a issue. The Ritva points out that the Gemara doesn't use the words v'loy osrulem chachamim. Rather, the wording of the Gemara is v'loy choshulem chachamim. That means what the Gemara uses this language is to teach us that l'chatchila, this is permissible. And just like, as we're going to be discussing, that one could have two pots next to each other, here too, you could l'chatchila go to one city, even though into one area, even though the other area is also. So ask the Gemara, what is meant when we learned l'choshulam chachamim? What is meant here? Amr Baya, what Baya means to say is mishum bas nevela. We have these two pots next to each other. And one pot, the Nachri is cooking his non-kosher meat. And one pot, the Jew is cooking kosher meat. We are not concerned that maybe the Jew will turn around and the Nochri will throw non-kosher meat into the pot of the Yisrael, and that will cause, of course, that the Yisrael will eat non-kosher meat, which is Issa Deraisa. And says, Abaye the Kavasar Chanami, here too, even though Atluza of Azza is very close to Azza, the halacha is we could sell an animal in that Luza of Akai, even though today is a holiday in Akam, and we're going to get money, and the concern is that that money may be money which is designated for Avodah Zarah. Chazal will not concern that maybe the money that's ending up in the pocket of the Jew is Avodah Zarah money, which of course we may not have any benefit from. So Gemara here discussed what is the halacha when two pots, one has kosher meat and one has not kosher meat, could they be cooking right next to each other? So the Rishonim asked the question, whenever the Nochri has nothing to gain by doing something, then we're not concerned he's going to do it. So over here, the Nochri is cooking his meat, the Yisrael is cooking his meat. What's the reason for concern that the Gemara is discussing? So the Rishonim respond that here we're speaking about the reason for concern is that we have to be concerned that maybe the Nochri is going to look at his meat and he's going to look at the Jew's meat and he's going to see that his meat is not as good quality as the Jew's meat. Therefore, he may switch because he wants to end up with a better piece of meat. And that's why the Paiskim say whenever that is a concern, we have to be concerned. And whenever there isn't such a concern, we don't have to be concerned. But here, we have to be concerned. And that's why, says Rebbeinu Tam, because we have this concern that the Nochri may be more interested in the Jew's piece of meat because it may be a better quality piece of meat than the Yisrael's piece of meat, says the Rebbeinu Tam that the Jew has to be watching all the time to make sure that the Nochri did not make a switch. So then the Rishonim ask, if the Jew has to be constantly paying attention to make sure that the Nochri is not making a switch, so then why is it l'chatchila permissible to allow this to happen? Why should we not be concerned that, as is quite possible, that the Jew will not be paying attention for a moment, and during that moment, the Nochri will make the switch? And from our Gemara, it seems l'chatchila we could have such a situation. Says the Arzurua that over here, the reason Chazal did not make such a gzera is because it's very far-fetched. First of all, if the Jew is supposed to watch, we have every reason to assume that if that's what the halacha requires of him, that's what he's going to do. And the halacha, number two, even if the Jew will not be watching the entire time, it only is under very limited circumstances that the Nochri may switch. First of all, it has to be a situation where the Nochri's meat is a poorer quality than the Yisrael's meat. And he wants that meat more. And therefore, the halacha is that the meat that ilchatila could be done. The Rashba, in fact, says, so now we said that the halacha is that the Nochri could be cooking non-kosher meat in his pot, with the Yisrael's pot right next to it with the kosher meat, and provided that the Yisrael is supervising the entire time, making sure that there's no problem, then the halacha is that you're allowed to keep it that way. So now the question that the Paiskim discuss is what will be the halacha if the Yisrael, the Rashba discusses, what will be the halacha if the Yisrael did turn away? Will that meat be asr or mutter? And the Rashba says that included in the halacha in our Gemara is that even if the Yisrael, which he shouldn't have, turns away for a moment, the meat is still kosher. But whenever we need to be concerned that the Jew is not supervising, and the Nachri has a reason to be, and the Nachri may want to switch the halacha that it's Osir, and there's some, but now we have a Machloikus Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that what does it mean that the Jew is supervising? That the Jew is supervising doesn't mean that the Jew is watching it constantly. Even if he's Yoytzev and Nichnas, even if he's coming in and out, and the Nachri doesn't know when he's coming and he's going, and he could show up any minute, that creates a mirsis, and the mirsis will prevent the Nachri from doing something wrong. However, Dar Zerua says that that is only in a case where the Nachri is concerned about getting caught. When the Nachri is not concerned about getting caught, then Yoytzev and Nichnas would not be adequate. Also, when we speak about the halacha of Yoytzev and Nichnas, it's only in a case where he's there more than he's less. There are different questions of how much of the time must he be there. And it's appropriate to mention that I once saw that there was somebody traveling on a plane, and there was a Jew and a non-Jew sitting next to each other. The Jew was served a kosher meal, and the non-Jew was served a non-kosher meal. The Jew had opened up the seals of his meal, the plastic covering of his meal, and then before he began eating it, he needed to go somewhere, and he left his meal unattended. He came back, and he realized, well, the meal that I left here unattended, who knows if the Nachri did not make a switch. And that's why, because he was concerned, he didn't eat his meal. A little while later, the Nachri, who was sitting next to him, asked him, why didn't you eat your meal? So he says that the halacha is that if I leave it unattended, I may not eat it, because there's a concern I might have gotten switched. At that point, the Nachri turned around to the Jew and says, I see how clever your rabbis were. He said, I saw your meal and I saw my meal. They looked the same, but I thought that your meal looked better, and I wanted to taste and see if the kosher meal is better or the same as the non-kosher meal. So I switched my main dish with your main dish, and I put your main dish on your tray. You would have never known. And that's what the halacha tells us, that whenever there's a concern, even if it's very unlikely, the halacha tells us that the meat has to be consistently supervised. And if there's anything, if there's any reason to believe that the Nachri has something to gain by switching, then the halacha doesn't allow us to eat that meat that was unsupervised. Rav Amram, but Rava has a different interpretation when he said that the Gemara compared the halacha of two pots to each other to the halacha of the holidays that we learned in the Mishnah. Rava, Maile Chashal Chamim, what was meant with that in our Mishnah? Mishum Bishulei Akum. The halacha is that we're concerned that the Nachri may cook the meat of the Jew, and then we may not eat it because it's Bishul Akum. The Kavasah Hachanami, here too, even though these two areas, the market of Aza and Aza, are very close to each other, the Chashal Cham Shemiyem Edom, Chazal were not concerned that the people from one area will follow what the people of the other area. And the way to understand this, according to Rava, is the Isra Bishul Akam is the Isra Durabonon, and the Isra of doing business with the Nachrim on their holidays is this the Rabbanan. And just like here, we're not concerned for Bishul Akum, that the Nachri may cook the Jews' food, Bishul Akum, we're not concerned because it's a holiday in one area, but not in the other area. But according to Rava's interpretation, we can't bring a raya from the case of the two pots next to each other, because there, the Nachri, as we learned, has nothing to gain. There, the Nachri, the Jew, the Nachri has nothing to gain, and the Jew is supervising, and that the Nachri didn't do anything wrong. And that's why the two situations are not comparable. So the Rishonim ask, why would there be an issue of Bishlakim here? What happened over here was that the Jew put the pot on the fire, and the halach is that once the Jew puts the pot on the fire, even if the Nachri stirs that food afterwards, there wouldn't be a concern of Bishlakim. So why would that even be a consideration? So the Tosfos explains that we're speaking about a case where the pots were put on the oven before the fire was lit. And what Rav is saying is that we're not concerned that the Nachri is going to put on the fire under the pot. Another pshat that some of the Rishonim suggest is as follows. The concern here, they explain, might be that the Nachri accidentally turned off the flame under the pot of the Jew, under the Jew's pot, and then realized that he did so, and he turned it off before the food under that pot was really cooked at all. And now he quickly turns on the flame again. But now his turning on the flame is really, when the food wasn't cooked at all, would be concerned of a bishlakim. The Rishonim give different variations of this answer. The same, they say that maybe the Achkum took off the Jew's pot from the fire before it was cooked and put it back on. And again, we don't have to be concerned for that. But according to these terutzim, the only reason we don't have to be concerned is in a case where the Jew is Yotzei v'Nichnes. And because the Jew is walking in and out all the time, so that's why we don't have to be concerned that anything like this happened, because if it would have happened, the Jew would be well aware that it happened. But if it wasn't that he was there all the time, or at least supervising, then these concerns of Bishlakim would be real. Rava Baravu Ba'ulama, L'chashm Chacham Shem Tzenaira. Chazal, the concern here was a different concern. We're not concerned that some of the gravy of the meat, of the non-kosher meat, spritzed into the pot of the Yisrael, because it's not likely to happen. And even if it happens, it'll be bottle baroy, whatever gravy spritzes in. And that's why it's mutter. And then connecting that to our Gemara, the Kavasah HaChinami, even though these two areas, that Luzo Shel Aza and Aza, are so close to each other, the halacha is that we don't have to be so concerned, like Chash L'cham Mishim Fnei Adayim, that we're talking about the whole issue here, it's only that before the holidays, as we've been learning through our Masechta, we have to be concerned that if somebody does business with a Nachri, what will be the result of that? Which is not even sure that there will be any result, and therefore we could be makel. And based on this, says Dar Zeruah, that since we're learning here that you could have a pot of kosher food right next to a pot of non-kosher food, And we don't need to be so concerned about anything spritzing one from the other. The same halacha would be that if somebody is cooking a pot with meat, and then somebody and he's cooking also a pot with dairy right next to each other, the halacha would be that one could keep these two pots next to each other and not be concerned about anything going from one pot to the other. Of course, there are many people that would be machmer and not allow that to happen. The Miri makes a very important point, and that he says that even though we have three different pshatim in the Maimer, and what we learned here, it doesn't mean that they disagree in halacha, and that each one could be lenient with the other. However, the Rosh says that when it comes to putting pots next to each other, one should be l'chatchila concerned with the different considerations that we mentioned in our shir. However, the Shach says, there's a machloikis how to understand what the Rosh means to say. Some suggest that what the Rosh means to say, that only in a circumstance where the Jew isn't there all the time. So he says, for example, if the Jew goes to shul and he leaves at home a non-Jewish person working, and now we have a concern that non-Jewish person if the pots kosher, non-kosher, etc., are near each other, or bishlakim, do we need to be concerned? But if there's a Jew there all the time, we don't need to be concerned because he's going to be supervising. And there are those that are machmer under all circumstances because you don't know what could happen. And there are those that are lenient under all circumstances because they feel we need not necessarily be concerned about any of these types of considerations, as we explained in the shir. Says the Gemara, Mao Leilach L'sham. So the Mishnah, as we discussed in the Mishnah, can you go to a city where they have a holiday? So the Mishnah said, it depends. If this is a road that only goes to that city, then and it's a day of Avodah Zarah, we have to be concerned. So says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan, Ir sheyesh bei Avodas Kochavim, a city that's having a holiday for Avodah Zarah, also l'kanes l'toichai, one may not enter that city because we're concerned that people are going to think that you're marasayin, that you're going to worship Avodah Zarah. Loi mitaycha li'ir acheres, and even if the purpose of going there is you're just traveling through that city to go to another city, it's still also divra meya. If it's a road that's used exclusively to get to that city, then you're not allowed to usher any derech mechedes l'moisa makom. But if it's not used only for that purpose, mutter. Yashav l'kaitz, and the Gemara gives us another story. If somebody got a thorn in his foot, and he's walking in front of a statue of Avodah Zarah, and that's where he got a thorn, l'yishav yitlenah, he shouldn't bow down to take it out of his foot. As he's bowing down to remove that thorn, people will think that what he's doing, that he's worshipping Avodah Zarah. And in fact, the Poskim discuss that even if you have a situation, that under all situation, we have to be concerned for Maris Ayin. The Gra says that the Pasuk in the Megillah says that Mordechai did not bow down to Haman, but everybody did. Says the Gra that why didn't they bow down? Because Haman had a Avodah Zarah on his clothing, on his garments. And that's why it looked like they're bowing down. And in fact, the Ramah discusses that apparently the custom was that they took off their hats in front of a person when they wanted to show honor. And what's the halacha if somebody is wearing a Avodah Zarah? You're allowed to do that. And he says that what you should do is not wait to take off the hat right in front of the person that's wearing an Avodah Zarah. Take it off from before. By taking it off from before, then you're not showing, by taking it off before, you're not showing that you're showing respect to Avodah Zarah. Next case. If money was scattered in front of Avodah Zarah, again, don't bow down to take that money. But if it's not obvious, mutter. If there's a spring that's going in front of Avodah Zarah, don't bow down to drink from it. Again, this looks like you're bowing down to the Avodah Zarah. Vim ain't a nira, but if it doesn't look that way, mutter. Pertzufas hamakalcha mayim bekrochim. They used to have statues that had water flowing through them. So somebody wants to take a drink of water, he may put his mouth right next to that spout and drink. Because again, that's usher. And actually Rashi says, kissing avodah zara is an issa deraisa. Ki yaitzba leinich piv al silon. Somebody should not put his mouth on a pipe that's bringing water. V'yishta nei sakana, because we don't know what may be in that water, and there may be an insect, something dangerous, and you'll be ingesting that. Says the Gemara, the Braisa says, "V'im ena nira mutar." Ask the Gemara, what is meant when it said ena nira? My ena nira. Ilem deloy meschazi, that nobody sees what you're doing. Ask the Gemara, would that make it mutar? As we mentioned earlier in our shir, v'am Rav Yehuda Merav, komakum she'asur chom b'nei maris ayin. Wherever Chazal said something is also for those of maris ayin, afil v'chad v'chadarim asur. It's always asur. There's no heter. Ela ema im einanir k'mishtachel v'edus k'chavim. If it's done in a way that it doesn't have the opinion that it looks like that you're doing a avodah zarah, then the halach is that it's mutar. So ask the Gemara the obvious question. We've mentioned so many different cases that anything that may have the appearance of avodah zarah is asur. Why did the Gemara have to give us all these different examples? V'tzricha. D'tanakotz, if we only learned the example where a thorn got stuck in your foot, that's why you're not allowed to stop there to take it out. Shundaf shalamezel kameya mishkalei. You can walk a little further and take out the thorn there. Avamos, but if money got scattered in front of the avodah zarah, dolay efshur, where that is not an option, emaloy. V'tanamos, and if we spoke about money, the remaina, where it's only money, so lose money. Avakotz, the tzara, if it affects the body, emaloy. Vitane hanitarti, if we spoke about these two cases, we could say that this is where Chazal was strict. Shindalaka sakana, a thorn won't kill anybody. And losing your money, it's only money. Avamayan, if somebody, when I talk about the mayan, dika sakana, dila shasi, there's a situation that a person is very thirsty, and if he doesn't drink, he may perish from thirst. Emeloi, we maybe the halacha would be that we could be lenient. Tzricha, that if that the halacha is that it's also. So of course the Rishonim asked the question. We're learning now that mayon, that taking the drink from the water, is the biggest chiddush because it's a situation of sakonas tefashos. So why if in the case of mayon that it's asur, so the halach is certainly should be that by the other cases where it's not a question of sakonas nefashos, it's asur. So the Rishonim answer that by the mayon, when you bow down and drink, it looks much more like you're bowing down than in the case of the kites and the money. So since it looks much more like you're bowing down, that's why we would think that dafka by the mayon it's asur, because it looks like you're bowing down. In the other cases where it's not that obvious that you're bowing down, maybe we could be lenient. Teaches us the Gemara we're not lenient ever. Then the Gemara gave us another halacha about sufos, that you're not allowed to drink from that fountain of avodah zarah. Why was it necessary to teach us that halacha as well? Answers the Gemara, Mishum the Kabbalah, Nesna, Kiyotz, Balay, Nech, Piv, Agabi, Ilam, Vesishta, Nei, Sakana, because then we learned the halacha that you're not allowed to drink from a pipe. Not because there's an avodah zarah consideration there, but there was a new consideration, and that's the consideration of the sakana. So because Braisa wants to teach us that halacha, the Braisa already taught us the other halachas as well, even though it's not mutter. This halacha of being concerned about how it looks when you're doing something is of course in our Gemara being taught as far as avodah zarah, but the halacha is also relevant regarding another din. The Ratvaz says that nobody should daven in front of a mirror, because when you daven in front of a mirror, says it looks like you're bowing down to somebody else. And the Mishnah Brura in Siman Tzadik Sifkatan Ayin Aleph says that even with closed eyes, should you not daven in front of a mirror. The Marsham in Das Torah, there's Siman Tzadik Sif Chav Gimel, has reason to be lenient, because what happens when I'm davening in front of a mirror? It looks like I'm bowing down to something, but at the same time that I'm bowing down to something, they're bowing down to me. So when do we have a concern? That's only when we're, says the Marsham, where it looks like we're bowing down. Our Gemara Tana Avodah Zarah. But if what we're bowing down to is bowing back down to us, we don't have to be concerned. The Sefer Ishi Yisrael takes us even a step further. And he says, davening in many shuls by the Amid, there may be a plaque or anything else that you could see your reflection in, that the halacha is that you shouldn't daven in front of such a plaque. The Sha'al Tshuvas Ohel Tzion is more lenient. I saw that Rav Zatzal wants to differentiate if you're doing it with open eyes, if you're doing it in front of open eyes or in front of closed eyes. And therefore, it would be, if it's done with closed eyes, he's more lenient. Then I saw the Chashuki Chemed asks a question. So our Gemara was very clear that if money fell down in front of Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to bow down in front of that Avodah Zarah to pick up the money, because somebody sees you doing so will think that you're worshipping an Avodah Zarah. And so the Isser is Maris Ayin. So the question that the Chashuki Chemed discusses is, what would be the halacha if you ask a Nachri to pick up that money? Of course we know, and we've been saying it often in our shiurim, and that is a Nachri is also usher to do Avodah Zarah. But even though a Nachri is usher to do Avodah Zarah, the concern of our Gemara is not outright worship of Avodah Zarah. The concern of our Gemara is a concern of Maris Ayin. So he wants to suggest that the Isser of Avodah Zarah by a Nachri, and the Isser that we're not allowed to let an Nachri do Avodah Zarah, is only in a case of outright Avodah Zarah. But when it's not outright Avodah Zarah, like an Al Gemara, it's only a Maris Ayin type of Avodah Zarah, there may be room for leniency. So Gemara spoke about the pipe of water that one should not bow down to drink from, because it's sakana. Ask them, Mamai Sakana, what's the Sakana? A Luka. There may be a worm or that's dangerous. It sucks out the blood of a person swimming in that water. And because it's at night, you don't see it. And the Gemara continues, Tan Rabban, Allah Yishta Adamayim, Blame in a Haras, Vulay, Min Hagamim, Loy Bepiv. Nobody should not just bow down and drink water from these bodies of water. Loy Biyada Achas, not by taking the water into one hand, then shasa dama b'roishai. And if he does this, he did something extremely dangerous. Nei sakana, again, matz the sakana, nei aluka, there may be an aluka swimming in that water that you will ingest. Says the Gemara, Messiah Rav Chanina, this halacha supports what Rav Chanina taught us. Dara Chanina, haboilei nima shalmayim, if somebody swallows this aluka, mutal hachal haichamim b'shabbos, it's considered a situation of sakonas nefashos, that the halacha is that we're allowed to even warm up water on Shabbos, which is, of course, chil Shabbos, but here it's mutter. Masa ve'echot shabala nima shalmayim, in fact, it was a situation where somebody swallowed this type of an insect. Ve'etram nechem yelahachon lechem b'Shabbos, he said we could warm up the water. Ad ha'chi ve'hachi, says the Gemara, so after drinking the saluka, what should he do? Amar afuna b'rei d'afuna, until the water is cooked up, ligama chalam, he should drink vinegar. Amar Rav Idi Bar Oven, Hayman de Bala Zibura, if somebody swallowed a bee, machilachai, he certainly can't live. Mir lishkai revis of the chalas shamgas, he should drink a revis of strong vinegar. Efsh de chai parta, he may be able to survive for a short amount of time, adam afka de besa, until he has the opportunity to make a tzava and tell his family what he wants to be done. Tana Rabbanan, similarly, la yishta adamayim b'layla, a person shouldn't drink at night. V'shas adam b'roishai, again, v'nei sakana. Ask the Gemara again, my sakana, what is the sakana? Saganus shavriri, that somebody, that this disease, which is known as shaviri, which is blindness, comes from drinking that water. But if somebody's thirsty and during the night and he wants to drink, but he doesn't want, of course, get hurt, what should he do? If there's somebody else there, he should wake up that other person and tell him, I'm thirsty. He should bang on the barrel of wine, because the concern here is for a shade. And when there's another person, or even the noise might scare away the shade. The name is Ila Nafshi. When he bangs on it, he should say, Planyi ba Plansi, Omlein Imoch, Izdar, Shavriri, Briri, Riri, Yari, Riri, Bekisi, Chavri. Saying this will be able to chase away, the shade. There's a question that the Paiskim discuss. If one is allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for somebody who is a Goysis. And the question is, since Chil Shabbos is permissible for a person who's going to live, as the Gemara often says, Chalal of Shabbos Achas Kidei Shishma Shabbos Harbe. But this person is not going to make it. Here, the Paiskim want to bring a Raya that it's permissible. Because in our Gemara, the Gemara says the person is not going to live, but he's allowed to do what he has to do, at least to be able to survive some period of time. But Rav Moshe has a very interesting approach. Rav Moshe wants to suggest there's two types of situations. One is where a person is unfortunately very sick. And Rav Moshe indeed says that when a person is very sick, from our Gemara, we see that even though his chances aren't that great, we should do whatever we can to help him survive even for a small amount of time. And then there's a concept of a goysis. And Rav Moshe wants to suggest that from our Gemara, we see that in the halacha, there's a difference between a goysis that we're not allowed to do things for and somebody who's just very sick. If a goysis we're not allowed to do, and for somebody who's very sick, we are allowed to do. From our Gemara, we also learn the importance of writing a tzava, because the Gemara says that here the concern is that this person may not survive, and he wouldn't have a chance to write a tzava, and his family won't want to know what to do. And the Pel Yoitz discusses how important it is to write a tzava. One reason he says is because by giving clear instructions what one wants done with his financial assets, you avoid machlokes, and it's also an opportunity for a parent who's writing tzava. The Shlach Kaddish writes this as well, that to write to his children message of what is important and what he wants should be done, how he wants his children to continue living their life. Our Gemara is also the proof to another question. Many Paiskim discuss the question of when somebody is mispalled, somebody damaged for somebody who's not well, and you mention the person's name, what name should you use? His mother's name or his father's name? And some Paiskim say from our Gemara, we see that the Gemara said that what should be say Planya ba Plansa, that when we're being mispalled for somebody, we mention the mother's name, not the father's name. Also, I saw from the Klos Magen Rebbe based on our Gemara, that our Gemara is again an important lesson in teaching us how valuable every moment of life is. Because the Gemara here says that this person is not going to make it. And even though the Gemara says that unfortunately this person is not going to make it, but for the few moments that he could still be alive, we should do whatever we can to survive. And I saw the Klausenberg Rebbe explains, because every Jew who's in this world is here for a purpose. And every moment that we are in the world, we could help achieve the purpose that we are here for. And therefore, since every moment is so vital in us carrying out our mission, the value of every Jewish life cannot be measured.